All right. Once again, my name's Toby, and I am an alcoholic. I'm privileged to introduce tonight's speaker. I can remember him walking, the first time I saw him walking through the door of the 164 group, and I looked over and I was like, oh wow, we got a live one. I wasn't quite sure what to make of it, and one thing I got out of this program is you never judge a book by its cover. And that is so true. This gentleman is probably one of the kindest, heartfelt, filled with emotion, meaning not overly emotion, but just sensitive people I've ever met. Probably because he's an artist, and he's definitely found this program, and he's learned how to live life. I've heard his story once before, but I'm sure it's changed or has grown with depth and insight, as only this guy can give it, and his name is Tom. With that, I give you Tom N.
Thank you, Toby. Very kind words. Very kind words. Probably untrue, but very, very kind. Everybody, I am Tom, and I am an alcoholic. And I'm glad that this program is more about attraction rather than promotion, because apparently you people find me very sexy. You're here. let me see. The only way to tell a story is from the beginning. Let's see. Well, I was born Thomas Patrick Norris, which is funny because my father insisted my name being Patrick Thomas. So right from day one, things got messed up. The birth certificate's wrong. So, all right, I'm starting off pretty good. I get released from the hospital with my mother, and she forgot me in a supermarket. And went home, and apparently somebody got in touch with her and was like, did you forget something? And she was like, no, I don't think so. She's like, your son? She's like, oh my God, and she came back and got me. So again, you know, from an early time, I'm getting ready for this family thing. So, I want to sit here, and I hear a lot of people talk, you know, they had normal family lives. Normal to me is what you grow up with. That's normal. All right, I grew up in an Irish family, so automatically, you know, I'm associated with the drink. I lived in a very tight-knit Irish community. So I was always protected. I was protected from the elements of the outside world. What my family did for money is what they did for money. This is what I thought most kids' parents did, all right? My father was in construction. And, you know, growing up, it's like, yeah, my dad's in construction. As I got a little older, I'm looking at him, and I'm like, you're in construction, you do it, but you're never dirty. You're never dirty. You know, and he's like, well, you know, I'm an organizer. Okay, and he's like, you know, it's nothing for me. Whatever he did, he did. You know, for me, I was around alcohol since birth. My grandmother and my grandfather were right off the boat from Ireland. My father was conceived in Ireland. He has dual citizenship. So again, you know, drinking just went hand in hand. This was my family, and this is what I knew. So I didn't really know what an alcoholic was. I just knew they drank. And everyone around us drank. This is normal. You know, I had a little brother. He was about 2 years younger than me, and unbeknownst to me, obviously I was very young, he died of a liver failure because my mother was drinking while pregnant. This is before we really knew the real dangers. So he passed away when he was about 1.5. So from there, again, I was very young. I didn't understand it. But I knew things were not right with my family. My father obviously felt responsible. My mother, I don't know if she did. I didn't really get a chance to know my mother. She she left me and my father when I was 7. At that same time, a cop out in Nassau County who was drunk killed my grandmother. And these were the only two women that I knew in my life. So one took off and the other one was killed. This is setting the precedence for how I'm going to treat women. All right, because now I have no trust in women. You know, either you'll be killed or you'll leave. That was very hard for me. I saw my grandfather break down. And this was a man who, he was my role model. I can't say that for my father, because my father was in and out of jail, and he had to deal with his own demons. But my grandfather was my role model, and he was the one who showed me love and how to love. He loved his wife more than anything in this world. I've never seen two people love each other more. And when that was taken, I saw my grandfather fall apart, and he could no longer take care of me. So, you know, I had to go stay with relatives, very close friends. They tried to raise me. And, you know, my father would come back in and out of my life, and I didn't understand, you know, but like I said, he tried the best he could. You know, he also is an alcoholic, and thank God he is, you know, in the program too. It's very hard for me, you know, to be able to look back at this and say I forgive these people. You know, I forgive the police officer. It took 30-something years for me to ever say that, because I hated that man. Because that man, as I see you, took my whole childhood from me. And he got away scot-free. My father actually got arrested for, they wanted to say attempted murder on a cop. They got it dropped down a lot less. If he didn't file the lawsuit, they would drop it. So he walked away with nothing. And I'm sitting there, you know, I don't have my grandmother. I don't have anybody now. And I'm living with strangers. Speed things up a little bit. My father, again, I wasn't brought up with the traditional moms, you know. And there were women in and out. This was my father's life. This was my stepmother today. This was my stepmother tomorrow. And this went on. So again, I had no respect for women. None. You know, and I don't blame my father. I just didn't respect him. You know, I'm like, if you let my father, you know, every day another woman and just get away with it. So, but that was my father's life. But again, this is the only man that I had. And for all the bad things that he may have done, he still protected me. I was always protected. At a young age, I thought that, you know, waited for me to make money. Well, I can't work a real job. I'm too young. So I went and I hustled. And my father caught wind of it and was upset, but said, if you're going to do it, you got to do it the right way. You can't be doing this nickel and dime bullshit. If you're going to do it, you got to do it a certain way. He showed me the ropes, and I did that. And he's not proud of it, and I'm not proud of it now. But this is what we did. And it was just business as usual. I started drinking at a very early age. I loved the taste of beer. I used to sit when I was young and steal my grandfather's beer. And I remember to this day so vividly. He asked me to get him a beer, and I did, and he's like, there's milk for you. And I remember I opened the beer and I'm drinking it, you know, and I'm slamming it, and I'm only like 6 years old. And I loved it, and he came in with, and he was a big man, he was like 6'3". And he had this thick Irish brogue, and he's just yelling at me, and I'm looking at him, and I'm like, ah, man. He's like, don't you speak English? And I said, do you? You know, because it was such a thick Irish brogue. And it was, I just remember his face, and he just grabbed it from me. And I just walked away, and I just remember how his face. Again, there was no consequence. It wasn't like I got trouble or a spanking or nothing like that. There were none. And that's how I went throughout my whole, you know, pretty much adolescent kid, you know, from 12 to 15. I had no consequence. I could do what I want. I did what I want. I thought this is the way people lived. You know, when my friends would invite me over for dinner, they would be sitting at the table. And I was like, what the hell? Because I would sit in front of the TV, you know? And that's what I did. You know, and there was a mother and a father, and I never got it. I never understood it. But it was something that I did want, because they had something that I wanted. Well, whether it was because I was alone. I mean, I had brothers and sisters, but they all moved out. Everyone did their own thing. And I was with my dad, and he did the best he could. You know, he did the best that he could. And at the age of 15, obviously, you know, I knew everything. I knew everything. I did not need anybody. I moved out. So, you know, I'm sitting there. I'm making a lot of money for a kid of 15. You know, I think I got this. I don't need school anymore. I don't need... The only thing I needed school for was because that was my business. It was... These were my clients. School got wind of that. They knew. They didn't want me back. You know? I would go in, pass my tests, and never... I had 38 days of school. Seat days. 38. And passed all my finals, and they're like, we cannot let you go on. They're like, you were not here enough. But I'm like, but I passed. You know? And it's me trying to screw the system. You know? I went, and I got what I had to get, and I got out, and I passed. You know, they threw me out many times. When I was 15, since technically I'm still a minor, I told them I was emancipated, so I could write my own notes. If I didn't show up for school, I told them I'd show up, you know. But the reality was I was not emancipated. My father was still alive. I said that he wasn't. And one time I got, you know, a letter from school. You know, I'd always intercept them. And he got a phone call. And they were like, yes, can I speak to Thomas Norris? His name is Thomas Norris. And he's a guest speaking. And they're like, you weren't in school today. And my father's like, well, are you talking about my son? And they're like, son? They're like, who are we speaking to? He's like, well, I'm his father. And they're like, oh, well, we were under the impression you were dead. He's like, nope, I'm alive and well. He's like, he's going to wish I was dead when I see him. I remember seeing him in the principal's office, and I was like, oh, it's over, you know. It's over. But my father said, you know it all. You know, gave me money. Go get your, go live. So I tried, you know. I learned a lot of things on the street, you know. If I ain't got that protection that I was used to, I was a target. I was a mark. I would get robbed left and right, and nothing I could do about it. I didn't have what I needed. So I'm not going to say I got in with the wrong crowds. I got in with people who were like me, drinking. I would always hang out with the older people, you know. I don't know why this is who I fit in with, you know. And I'm not going to say that it was terrible. It wasn't. It wasn't. It wouldn't. If it was all terrible, it wouldn't have kept me out as long. So I don't look back at that and say, you know, terrible things, you know. I had a great childhood, you know, as far as I'm concerned. You know, some people look at it and be like, well, that's horrible, you know, but it was what it was, you know. And it's hard when you're trying to raise yourself, you know. Television becomes your role model. You start looking at things like, well, that's what I want, that's what I want. So when I was about 17, I got into music. And, you know, I'm 17 years old, and I started finding a little success in music. The bands that I were in were traveling, we were getting into all the clubs, alcohol, drugs, women, whatever you wanted is easily available. So again, now I'm protected by these people. This is now my new family. You know, we have this brotherhood, and we're getting everything we want. There are no consequences. You know, what's the biggest consequence that's going to happen? Nothing. There's nothing going to happen to me. I didn't think about what happened to other people, but me, what's going to happen? I'm living the life that you people see on TV. I'm 17 years old. You know, this is the greatest thing on earth. This goes on for a couple years. I would say 4 or 5, maybe 5 years. And I find this woman. You know, we knew each other in high school. And she comes to me, and we were dating on and off, and everything was great. She comes to me and says that she's pregnant, which I didn't know that she could get pregnant, because she told me that she couldn't, but I was so happy, you know. I'm 20-something years old, you know. I'm making all this money. I'm doing this. I'm going to be the greatest father ever. That's what I wanted to be, the greatest father ever. I was going to show you all that you can do this. You can live this lifestyle. You can be whoever you want to be, self-will. I did this, you know. So throughout the pregnancy, I decided, you know, well, let me do it right. So I got married. Now this woman who I married, she's a wonderful, wonderful woman. I didn't see it at the time. I felt that I owed her. She stuck with me from the beginning. So, all right, you know, I'm still gonna do what I'm gonna do, and you're gonna accept it. But now that you're gonna have my child, you know, I want the child to have my name. You know, now I wanna be responsible, you know, but I'm still gonna do what I do. So I remember I was on tour, and I was up in Maine, and it was around this time, Halloween, and, you know, my alcoholism and other addictions were really out of hand, and we're playing a High Times festival, and if you know that magazine, then you know what it's about. So I'm up there, and this is before, like, smartphones, and, you know, it's just regular cell phones and beepers, and, you know, we're there 3 days for the festival, and, you know, I'm getting beeps by my wife. So I'm like, oh shit, you know, it's probably time. I got to get back to New York. And I remember I was on the phone with managers, and I'm like, you need to fly me back, and I'm not doing this show. I don't give a, you know, crap about anything. I want to get back because I wanted to see the birth of my daughter, you know. And thank God, you know, they did get me back. And on November 6th, you know, 2000, it was like I'm probably a little wrong with the time. I was not really in the right frame of mind. But I know it was early in the morning. I know that. And my wife went through 27 hours of labor. And I remember, you know, her screaming, and she bit me really hard. And, you know, I remember that. And I was like, I know it's too late for her to get any drugs, but can you get me some? I said, because I'm dealing with this too, you know. And I remember it was like 5:30, 5:40 in the morning, and my daughter was born. And that moment, I have never felt so much love in my life. I thought I was incapable of loving, you know, on to that level. And when I held her in my arms, I remember you know, whispering in her ear that, you know, that I'm going to take care of you. I'm going to be the best daddy ever. You know, and this is what I truly thought, you know, and that's what I truly wanted to be. Pretty much as soon as I put it back down, I was out drinking, and I was getting hammered. And I remember I came back to the hospital, and I was asked to leave because I was so drunk, you know, and I'm celebrating. Oh, I just had, you know, baby girl. But I was just drunk and belligerent, an asshole. So needless to say, I go back out on tour. Then I'm gone for 3 months, and I come back, and all those promises I made this little girl, and how what a great, wonderful father I'm going to be. I came walking in the door with my bags, walked right past my wife, right past my daughter, right into the room, and passed out. My wife comes in and says, "Hello, you feel?" I'm like, "What?" She's like, "You walked past me, and you walked past your daughter." And I forgot I even had a daughter. That's how far I was like, oh my God. And when she put that baby in my hands, I was shaking because I didn't know what to do. I was like, oh my God, this is bad. You know, I don't know what to do. Those promises I made of the success, the money's gone now. You know, that's spent. I don't know what to do. And I had a moment of clarity that this is real, you know. But again, being the great alcoholic that I was, you know, went back on the road, figured I could make more money. That was when my wife left me and took my baby, you know. Somebody who the only thing that I loved, the only thing I truly loved, you know. And I was thinking how unfair it was, you know. I'm making money and things, you know, don't worry, it's all going to work out. And I was able to, you know, get my daughter things, but that's all it was things. I could not be a father. I didn't know what to do. I thought if I threw money at it, you know, all right, I'm a great dad, super dad. So I tried to really be a dad. I bought a house, I bought cars, like, all right, you know, I'm going to live the American dream. You know, and I was fooling myself, you know, and, you know, my wife got sick of it, and I didn't blame her, I didn't, so needless to say, my music career was pretty short-lived, 10 years, but still, at age 27, you know, it was over, and most of it was due to, you know, alcohol and drugs. I never lost anything. I gave it away. I gave my career away. I just, alcohol and drugs became more important. Other things became more, you know, more important than my family. So the only thing that I loved in this life is gone, living with a mother. So I'm trying to regroup, and I'm making promises, like I'm pretty sure a lot of us make. We make promises that we're never going to do it again, and it's going to get better. And I had to get a real job, the first one in my life. And I had no idea what I was going to do. None. I went to college and I went to a music school. So this is all I knew was music. And I had no idea what to do. So I picked the first job out of the paper. And it happened to be a crisis position for homeless shelters and battered women, and so I picked that job. And you know, I did pretty well in that job. It was a pretty good paying job. But the wonderful thing about that job, to being an alcoholic, was I did overnights, and I could do whatever I wanted, you know. So I would drink and do all sorts of things there, you know. And I'm supposed to help people, you know, in the middle of a crisis, and I'm sitting here partying, you know, in my office, thinking that, you know, it's great. And I remember people coming to me with real problems, and me trying to talk to them and explain. They're like, "Oh man, you know a lot about this," and I'm like, "Oh, 'cause I am." You know, I'm thinking I'm an active alcoholic. I'm an active drug addict. This is, I do it beautifully because I do it. Through this time, I wound up getting divorced. My alcoholism and other things were a major contributor to it, but in all actuality, and I never mean this to hurt this woman, I was not in love with this woman. She always deserved somebody better than me, and I always said that to her, because I knew I was not a decent man, or a good man, or let alone a man. I wasn't. So, you know, that was that. I knew that she would be a good mother. I knew that. I knew that where I was at that point in my life, that I could not be a good father. I wanted to be in contact with my daughter. Always, I wanted her to know how much I loved her. But I couldn't be a good father. I couldn't. So, like every other good alcoholic, and you know, I went and found a beautiful woman. It was like, wonderful. This person knows me, you know. She's a musician. She parties. Wow. I hit the jackpot. I'm going to come to find out. All I did was find myself in a female version. That's all I did. So, who was I really? I was in love with me. I was in love with the fact that I could, you know, do what I want now, and all right, now I got a bonus. You know, it's a woman. Cool. The problem with that is, I forgot the old saying, you know, you can date them. You don't have to get married again. I did. And we had a daughter. She's 3 years old, and haven't seen her in 2 years. In 2 years, I haven't seen her. You know, and I miss that little girl, and this is becoming a very ugly divorce. Yeah. And I don't blame, you know, my ex for it. I don't. You know, I was a different person back then. You know, which leads me up to about 2 years ago. No, it's hard to talk about things sometimes, because you want to feel that, you know, you were stronger. But when my bottom came, you know, it came. It wasn't like I wasn't expecting it. You know, every day keep getting worse. You know, so it came to the point where I was like, well, I'm just gonna take my life. I'm done. I'm not going to bore you with the details. Obviously, it didn't work. I'm here. My last drunk, I remember laying in my own blood in North Carolina at an Ingalls parking lot. Cops had me at gunpoint, and I was done. I could not fight anymore. So I remember them talking to me, and they're like, well, we'll give you the option. You know, you can go to jail, you can go to rehab. I was like, well, which jail am I going to go to? Because I'm not going to rehab. Because I'm still sick. You know, it's all over, man. You're laying in your own blood in the middle of a parking lot, you know, and you have nothing. And they were like, well, we're going to take you to the hospital and we'll let you think about it. Because they had to stitch me up. So I had 3 days in a hospital while they were, you know, letting me detox or whatever. And they decided, because I was still not going to go to rehab, they decided for me that I was going to rehab. So they sent me across the state, you know, because they didn't want me there. For, you know, they sent me across the state. And put me in a hospital, and I still was not ready. You know, I was thinking, well, when I get out, I'll just finish it. So me and my act of rebellious defiance that I had towards the doctors and everything who were helping me, I refused to talk. So I remember I sat there for 15 days and I didn't talk. And the doc was like, "We don't have to let you go. You know that." And I was like, "All right, I'll play the game. I'll play the game and I'll get out." And I remember I would say, I opened up to him. I said, on one condition, already I'm making conditions. I'm in no position to be making any demands. But I said, you know, I'll talk to you about stuff if I can call my daughter. Because I'm sure she's worried. And I called her and told her, you know, I was in the hospital and I was really sick. And I don't know if I'm going to make it out. But I want you to know how much I love you and all of this. And she's she was going on 11 years old. And she asked me if I was in rehab. I said, yeah. And she was like, again? I was like, yeah. She was like, well, Dad, she's like, you are the strongest man that I know. And you can do it. And at that point, my heart broke. What was left of it. It broke, and I remember just, you know, tears welling up my eyes and telling her that I don't think that I can do it. You know? And I remember hanging up with the phone, telling her how much I loved her, and just dragging my carcass back to my room, feeling like the biggest piece of shit on earth. And I remember that was the day that I truly screamed out to God, you know, I don't care what happens to me. I just don't want to be like this. I don't want to drink. I don't want to do drugs. And I want to say that almost instantly the next day, I'm in a meeting in the hospital. And was the obsession removed? You know what? I didn't think about it. I didn't think about it. I just thought, wow, you know, I don't feel as bad as I did yesterday. You know? And I felt okay. And I don't, the only thing I can say is that it had to have been God, because it wasn't me. You know? I remember when I got out, they sent me to a halfway house, which turned out to be pretty much like a dope hole. That's what it was. Everybody was still drinking and they were partying. And yeah, we got to stay there. And the brochure says we're going to meetings, we're doing this. And I get there and none of that's happening. So I'm only like 2 weeks sober, you know, clean. And you're putting me right back in a situation, you know. And I don't know anybody. And I'm like, oh, shit, what am I going to do? So, I just didn't drink. I just didn't do drugs. And I stayed to myself. I met a couple people who were working the program. Half-ass. And that's what I stuck with. And then I heard my daughter was moving to Florida with her family. And I said, well, that's where I'm going. I don't know what the hell I'm going to do here when I get here. But I'm going. My father bought me a train ticket. There was another rehab right in Clearwater. And I was so excited, you know. I was, I'm going to go see my daughter. I don't know how I'm going to do it, but I'm going to do it. And I remember boarding the train and the excitement. And I met a friend on the train who knew me from my music. And we got to talking, and he was telling me he lived in Tampa. And, you know, that we should get together. And I explained to him that, you know, I'm going to rehab for a little while. Maybe when I get out, you know, we can talk. And so I get to Clearwater and I'm thinking, all right, you know, it's a different rehab. It ain't going to be a dope hole. It's the same company, though. But I'm thinking it's going to be different. I remember I got dropped off by the bus in front of Hooters right in Clearwater. And I'm like, what a bad place for me to be right now. So I call them, and I'm like, can you guys come get me? I'm here. And they were like, ah, we don't got a van. Where are you? I was like, well, I'm in front of Hooters. Yeah. We're right down the road, man. You could walk. I'm like, you realize I just got out of, you know, another rehab. Two and a half weeks, 3 weeks sober. Yeah. Yeah, we're right here. So when you get here? I was like, this is not good. I get there. I meet the manager, whatever. He's like, yeah, your room's here. Knock on the door. Guy's smoking a joint. Opens the door. I was like, oh, wow. I'm like, this is Peachtree, right? Like, oh, yeah, come in. I was like, oh, shit. I'm right back in it, man. I'm right back in another dope hole. I was like, son of a bitch, man. What am I going to do? Call my friend. Yeah, that's what I'll do. I'll call him. Called him. He's like, yeah, I got an extra room. Get you a job. Just come out to Tampa. All right. So I get out of Tampa again. Got my bags. He picks me up, brings me to his house. Got a really nice house. I'm like, all right, this might work, you know. Introduced me to a guy. Bought a job. Okay, great. Next day comes, I see him, and he's drinking, you know? And this is a man who I was under the impression that was in the program. I'm like, what are you doing? He's like, well, I'm having a drink. He's like, but I'm not an alcoholic, you know? I was like, it's 9 o'clock in the morning, you know? And he's like, no, I'm mostly, you know, with drugs. And I was like, okay, that's wonderful. I was like, so when are we going to these, you know, when are we going to the meetings? He's like, well, I don't go to meetings. I'm like, what do you mean you don't go to meetings? He's like, well, I did when I was in Jersey. I don't hear. I said, well, that's not going to help me. He's like, no, you will find you one. We'll find you one. I was like, great. Now, I'm in Cheval. You know, it's a very nice, if anyone knows it, it's really nice. So, okay, you know, I'm sitting there. But just because things on the outside look good doesn't mean they're good on the inside. Inside this house, I'm coming to learn that he's a dope head. Okay? So I'm just in a nice, pretty dope house now. So I have not changed that much. I keep going from dope, and I'm like, well, how long am I going to stay sober? How long can I do this? You know? And then I was given the opportunity. He's like, well, you know, we need to find you a job, but, you know, your appearance is kind of blah, blah, blah. So why don't you sling for me? I'm like, you got to be kidding, man. This is why I'm here, you know, just to do this again. And as crazy as it was, I thought about it. I did. I started scouting out prospects, as I call them. I went to a couple bars. I didn't drink. Shot pool. Looked around. And I met somebody, this girl, and we're talking, so-and-so conversation, and she was like, well, you know, we can meet up tomorrow, but I have to go to an AA meeting, you know, later. And I'm like, we're in a bar. She's like, yeah, I know, right? I was like, I said, well, where is the meeting? And she's like, oh, it's right up there at Stevens Pools. I was like, oh, wow, you know, can you take me? You know, she was like, yeah, just come. I didn't know how it really worked to, you know, down here, how the meetings were. I didn't know. So I went there, and from what I'm told, that I looked like a real angry person when I walked in there. This is what I'm told, you know. And I was angry. I was miserable. I put myself in a bad position. Again, you know. And at that moment, I had no idea what I was going to do. But I knew in that meeting, the odds are was, I'm not going to sell drugs. I'm not going to drink here. So for an hour, at least I can get away from that bullshit. And I did that for a couple times. I would walk from Cheval to the meeting place. And I remember I was walking home. It was probably mid-November, and this is when I started meeting people, and I started listening to what they had to say. And everything that I thought that I was going to do made absolutely no sense at that time. right there and then. I'm walking home, and I said to myself, well, I'm going to sell drugs so I don't have to sell drugs. It doesn't make sense. So I remember I went back to the house where I was, and I told the guy, I'm not going to do it. He said, well, you're not going to live here. I said, well, that's okay. That's all right. I said, I'd rather be on the streets than do this shit again. For whatever moment of clarity hit me right then and there, that's what I decided. I decided that next day to get a sponsor. And I didn't know how that worked either. I didn't want to be anybody's prize bitch, because that's what I thought it was like, you know. Oh, will you please sponsor me? You know, oh, look who I got, you know. I didn't want that. I didn't know how it worked. And I remember listening to my sponsor speak, and they said, you know, I didn't want anybody like me. I knew that, you know, because then we're just two fucking fuck-ups together. So what he had to say, it made sense. I don't know why it did, but it did. And I remember I asked him to be my sponsor. And I don't think he took me serious. I think I heard along the lines he had bets on me. And that was okay, man. Because I owe that man a great deal of gratitude. And he showed me how to do this. I didn't know. You know, I was a very angry person. Very angry. And he just showed me how to do it. And like I said, he's a great man. I wish that he was here today. He's not that great today. But I owe him a lot. And he showed me a lot of things. And you know what? The greatest thing is, you know, he showed me that there's a different way. You know, there's a different way. And I remember him saying, you know, you only gotta change one thing. And I'm like, cool, my God, because I'm fucking lazy. He's like, everything. And I was like, you suck. You know, I fucking hated him. But I did, and I remember the steps. I did them in 5 minutes. You know, I did them in 5 minutes. I looked at them, oh, yeah, I'm done. All right, cool, I'm done. You know, I started making amends, calling people, and them hanging up on me, and them telling me to fuck myself. And I'm like, go to my sponsor. I'm like, this ain't working. He's like, what step are you on? I'm like, one. He's like, what the hell are you doing step 9 for? You know, what are you doing your step? He's like, you're not up there yet. I was like, oh, maybe that's why it didn't work. I'm like, because it failed very miserably, you know, just to let you know. So we went through the steps. And the way he explained it to me is that he's going to take me the way that his sponsor took him. So he asked me if I was willing. I said, yes, I'm willing. And then he's like, can you be completely honest? And I'm like, you're asking an alcoholic addict to be honest? You know, and I'm like, if I say yes, am I lying? But if I mean it, am I telling, you know, because I meant it. I wanted nothing more than just to finally do something, you know, do something. And he got me through the steps, man. He did. He introduced me to a whole new life. And I'm very grateful for him. I'm very grateful for the program. Through this program, I found an inner peace. I found serenity. I found everything in this program that I thought money could buy. It cost me nothing. Nothing. Which was amazing. I found adult love in this program. Something that Bill talks about, you know, mature love, you know, and I was taught how to live, to live on life's terms, not the way that I want it, it's the way that it is, and to accept it, you know, which is a great thing, because you know what, not every day in sobriety is going to be a great day, okay, for me personally, but regardless, it's a gift, and that's why it's called the present. And I have to treat it like that. That it's, I may not love it at the time it's happening, but I'm sure it'll be useful. And it is, because that's what God does. you know, these are all presents and they're all gifts. And when they say, I think a lot of people, when we hear the word miracle, we expect to see like the burning bush or this or walking on water. And I don't think that's the case at all. I think the true case of a miracle is when you are hopeless. When you are hopeless and the people around you, you know, will pick you up, they will love you until you can find a way to love yourself. And when you do love yourself, there's a miracle. That's your miracle. Okay? Great or small, they're all around you. So again, through this program, I am eternally grateful. I will be getting married on March 15, 2015. Again, three times a charm. I've been blessed with a family now, which I could have never dreamed of. Never. Through this marriage, we'll have six children. My children, her children. They're our children. They're our children. And I love them very much. And because of this program, my son has asked me to chaperone his field trip tomorrow. How amazing is that? You know. You know, I just smile because he could have asked his mother, you know, he could have asked, you know, his biological father or anybody, but he asked me. You know. And that was amazing. So tomorrow I get to play farmer on old McMickey's farm. Alright, you know. But not for this program would I do that. So, regardless of how I got here, I'm here. And that's all that matters, is that I'm here. You know, we follow paths in our lives. They're laid out. That's the wonderful thing about God. He puts paths out there for you. There's your free will. Choose which path. Align it with God, and I'm pretty sure things will go all right. Take it upon yourself, well, you'll learn. Again, I look at my God, and I can only speak for myself because this program allows us to do this. The God of my understanding, I look at him as the Father who looks over us. He does not punish. He disciplines, as a good father should. He will let you make mistakes. He'll let you make mistakes more than once. From there will come discipline. You know, some of us will get it. Some of us, it takes a longer time. But in the end, we all get it. All right, so the path that I take, the path that you take may be completely opposite, but in the end, it all leads up to the same destination. So we all know where we're going. Now let's just have fun getting there. All right? Thank you.
Tom M. Anna.